Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here on an episode of Atlanta Business Radio, a special edition with my co-host, Daryl Thomas. This is the Neighborhood Business Edition. Daryl, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful this morning. How about yourself?
I'm excited to have this full house here. You got paparazzi, you got a whole crew there, got cameras going, there's phones flying.
I'm just setting the standard. I want you to know every time you see me, that's how it's going to be.
All right. So you brought a friend of yours or a business associate of yours
in
the studio?
Yes, longtime friend, longtime business associate. I have so much respect for this man. I'm so happy he's our first guest for this.
All right. So who do you got?
This is Anton Watt, real estate mogul. But I mean, he does a better job of defining himself. But essentially what he does is he works in the wholesale market at a very young age. Most people that around his age aren't really seeing the success that he is. And really, we just want to pick his brain and see how we can distribute that success to other people and, you know, their avenues and just hear what we can from him.
All right. Anton, what's the name of your firm?
Oh, Net Worth Realty.
Net Worth Realty. Yeah. And what exactly is a wholesale? What's wholesale real estate? I never heard of that.
So a wholesale real estate is the step right before investment real estate. So basically, someone looks to sell their house. It's in disrepair. They can't necessarily sell it to somebody that can immediately move into it. So what they do is find someone like myself who represents a larger firm that has a lot of cash backing them. We go in, purchase the property from the seller, turn around and sell it to an investor so that they can go and do a renovation, turn the house back into the quality that it needs to be so that they can sell it on the open market and then go ahead and do that. So that's wholesale.
So that's wholesale. So your customer is who?
The investor.
The investor. So you're working for the investor and finding these properties?
Right, right.
So who initiates a conversation with the owner of the property?
I do. So I pretty much take the entire process up until I introduce the property to the investor. You know, investors, they have many different jobs. They wear many different hats. They're family men. They've got careers, corporate careers, things like that. They don't have time to always look for properties. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I pretty much take, you know, three or four steps out of the process and provide these guys with, you know, quality properties.
Seeing as investors are somebody that has a certain amount of capital, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So when you're approaching somebody like this, does your youth or your age affect how they see you or affect how you approach them? Like, what does your youth or your ethnicity or, you know, your character in itself have to do with how you approach your investor?
So initially, I really thought it would have a huge impact. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was that the more you talk to people in these positions, the more they realize how much you know about what you're talking about, the less your age really matters. Mm-hmm. So it's more like a superficial thing for yourself. But when you're talking to them, they almost, I feel like, don't even see you as, oh, a 24, 25-year-old in the real estate market. What does he know? He's done 50 transactions, you know, in a span of a year, year and a half. Wow, I should listen to this guy. And that's what a lot of people, I feel like, see when we speak.
So in the business world, you're seeing kind of more results, that's kind of the metric rather than anything superficial.
Exactly. So results for sure. Quality properties and profits. Mm-hmm. Is what people want.
So they don't care who's bringing it to them.
No.
As long as you're getting the job done.
As long as you're getting the job done and you can trust them.
Right. So, yeah. So how'd you get into this?
Oh, so actually a long story. So can I give them the whole
thing? Yeah, let them know. Let them know what happened, man.
Okay, so, you know, back in college, me and Daryl, we actually started a business with two other gentlemen that about energy efficiency. We would go around to office buildings like this and put together a package where we'd show people how lighting efficiency would save them time and money. Mm-hmm. And the whole end goal of that project was to be a solar company at the end of the day. A year or so goes by, we work pretty hard, and then eventually we finally start getting some business, some traction, and then a solar company takes notice of us and our other partners in the firm. There were two other guys, and we structure a deal where we combine firms. So kind of like a merger, more like a takeover.
Yeah, they acquired.
Yeah. It was more like a takeover.
Because you didn't have a good lawyer.
No, we did not.
He didn't know anything about equity either.
Yeah, we learned a lot. We definitely learned a lot. So after that, after the merger, you know, things definitely changed. It wasn't necessarily meeting the vision that I had and Daryl had. So, you know, we eventually decided to leave and do something else. And I had a roommate at the time that was doing wholesale real estate at the firm that I'm working at. He told me a lot about it. And, you know, I was just transitioning from working here full time to really trying to figure out what I was going to do.
Right.
So I went in for an interview and I started, you know, going about trying to work for the company, and I got the job. So,
is there some skill or some personality traits that you think kind of contributed to your success?
I would say it's tenacity. You know, the idea of being able to go into the office, look around at everyone else, because real estate is very competitive. And everyone in my office competes against each other. And the ability to walk around and look at these other wholesalers and say, you know what? I want to take what they've done and just take it to the next level and really try and progress on it and just every day try to be a little bit better than you were the day before. And I think that has a lot to do with it.
So, you know, when you look at a lot of successful entrepreneurs, and that's what I'll consider you, because you work off of 100% commission, right?
Yep, 100%.
So really what they provide for you is infrastructure, correct?
Right. Exactly.
So when you look at entrepreneurs and you look at how they're driven and what keeps them going, it always comes back from, you know, I would say it's a lot of collective things that make you who you are or what drive you, but it always comes back from one single thing. So from your childhood or from your earlier youth, what do you think you could connect to what keeps you going? What keeps you competitive? What keeps you going every morning? What do you think is your driver?
You know, I think it has a lot to do with the recession, honestly. I think going through the recession, you know, and I wasn't in a position to work or anything like that. I was just part of a family. But seeing what happened where my parents lost their jobs and things like that, and, you know, food and money was not as taken for granted as it used to be, that really motivated me to, you know, make sure that one day I wouldn't be in that position no matter what kind of economy we're in. And it just kind of installed a hustle mentality that no matter what, you really have to make sure you take care of yourself.
Well, when you're on a commission sales basis, it's kind of an eat what you kill kind of world, right?
Absolutely.
And that's kind of the way the world is.
Absolutely.
And you can't look at your job as a place that, you know, you're guaranteed anything.
Right.
And then when you have that, you went to school KSU, right?
Right. Yeah.
Did that prepare you for this? Did that kind of get you in the right mindset to, you know, I have to be a hustler. I have to go out there and make things happen. I can't wait for opportunity to come to me. I got to go out and find that.
Partially, yes. I would say more of the out of classroom aspect really did that, because outside of the classroom, I would run into different people doing really amazing things, especially in this organization that we were in called Enactus. Mm-hmm. It was such a great organization where everybody in the organization had a dream. They had a goal and they really pushed for it, no matter what it was. And I think just being around those types of people really molds you into being, you know, just a really go-getter, a hustler, no matter what you have to do.
So can you talk a little bit about Enactus?
We were actually both in that group there. We, Leo or Daryl here was actually the leader of the presentation team that we had.
So this was extracurricular or this was a class?
Yeah. No, it was extracurricular, 100%. The business model behind Enactus, or the club model behind Enactus, was to encourage young business-minded people to start businesses under the umbrella of Enactus and try to make them successful with guidance from counselors so that you can learn how to actually structure a business when you get out into the real world after college.
So you're starting it from scratch, just an idea.
From pieces of paper and pen.
So how did you build a team? How do you get people to kind of all decide, hey, we're all going to do, I guess you did that energy thing?
Energy and the word passion. You know, right. You let people feel your passion.
So whose idea was the energy?
It comes deep down from where I was back in 2006.
Right.
I saw a movie called Al Gore movie. I don't remember.
Oh, right.
Inconvenient Truth. Mm. And I thought, man, the world's really going down. So I need to do something. And when we ran across other people trying to do that, it just clicked.
Mm-hmm. So you said, hey, I think we should do something in this space. And then the other people said, hey, we're in. Is that you recruited a handful of other people?
Well, actually, these two other gentlemen were already starting and had written down a plan. And then when they approached us, we brought the energy to actually kickstart it. Yeah.
And then so you joined forces.
We joined forces, yeah.
And so, Daryl, you were part of that as well.
Oh, yeah. That was a huge part of my life. It shaped really who I am sitting right now. Right.
So that had an impact on both of you, that group.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and that was just an extracurricular activity.
It felt like a career.
It
was full time. Felt full time.
It felt like a career. It did.
And so what made it special? Was it the teachers or just the program itself?
I think it was the fact that we were finally doing something structured that had an end goal and really you had a plan and vision for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prior to that, everything I was doing was just with the passion that I had. But nothing was really pushing me towards that end goal.
Right. So there was a direction and a structure that enabled you to kind of channel that passion into something. Right. And you made it, you know, come alive.
Exactly. And that's really what Enactus really taught us, mm-hmm. to focus that energy into a goal.
And and obviously those skills are transferable because you're not doing that anymore, but you're using that kind of same philosophy in your new career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A major part of it was just getting past the part of getting your ideas out and to actually having people connect with your ideas on a deeper level. And I really learned a lot of that in Enactus back in KSU.
Now, getting back to your day job at Networth, so what's your day-to-day look for you? Like, what do you do?
Day-to-day. I like to start my day. I try to wake up at 6. I normally get out of bed around 6:30. First thing I want to do is check my email. Get in traffic on the way to Atlanta for about an hour. I still live in Kennesaw.
Oh, wow.
So my office is in Midtown, so I take an hour trip every morning. Get to the office, have another cup of coffee if I haven't had one already. See, I've got one right here.
That's right.
And other than that,
The phone or you're out physically driving around neighborhoods?
On the phone, in the neighborhoods. I have a little Bluetooth headset where I'll try and line up at least 5 houses to see that day.
How do you identify them?
Well, I try to find a lot of motivated sellers that are looking to sell their properties and set up appointments. Other than that, there's a service called the FMLS, which is a multiple listing service.
Mm-hmm.
I start my day generally scrolling through the FMLS to see what's a new property on the market. If I find one in a specific area, I'll try to find 2 or 3 more around there that I can just knock out all at the same time.
Right.
Also set up appointments with my motivated sellers that I send letters to, or sometimes I call them directly and say, hey, are you looking to sell? If they are, then so be it. A lot of people are still going through the foreclosure and short sales. So, you know, we're actually able to get in there and help them before it gets to that process
right.
of buying their property. And I have a lot of meetings like that. Other than that, I'll meet with investors at my office to show them how they can flip houses. A lot of people don't necessarily know how to go about doing it. And my company, we not only offer the property, but we can also offer the hard money construction loan. We can also offer third-party contractors that can go ahead and do the flip for you. And then we also offer a 1% listing. Normally, it's a 3% listing fee, but we'll do it for 1, save you about $4,000 on a $200,000 sale.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a turnkey. Oh, they just have to put up the money, and then you have all the systems in place to kind of get the house and then refurbish it and flip it.
Right. No necessarily where to go on certain aspects of the project. We can fill in the gaps, but a lot of our investors really are self-sufficient. They're just looking for properties, so we can just buy them and sell them as quickly as possible and get them to do these flips because time is of the essence.
Right. Now, what's your personal best of finding and flipping a house?
What's my personal best? I would actually say maybe 2 weeks ago, I finally got a deal that I've been working on for about 3 or 4 months. It started even before that, a year ago. in a neighborhood that I bought a house from a gentleman that I sent a letter to. And I drove around to other and looking at houses that were in disrepair, but it looked like somebody might be living there. Call that person up and or, you know, try and reach out to them somehow, whether that be a letter or call them. I called this particular gentleman. He was going through a short sale process and he was on a very good street, very nice area, but he really needed to sell his property so that he could get out of this situation. And we were able to pick it up. It took about 3 or 4 months to finally get it done, but that was a good one.
That was a good one. Mm-hmm. Looking back at your career so far, and you've been around other people that went through college with you and maybe grew up with you, what do you think stops them from being successful?
Well, a lot of the people that I've been around, they keep their drive, but I would say a lot of people that lose their drive really lose it to just life wearing you down because, you know, in life, just even getting to work in the morning, you really have to work. You really have to try.
You have an hour battle every morning, right?
And you're dodging before
the sun's up.
Right. So, and that's a great metaphor for life. You know, life will just keep beating you up and beating you down. And eventually, you know, it's easier to stay down than it is to get back up. And I think that's what happens to a lot of people.
Mm. And any advice for them to keep going?
Get up.
Get up. One more time.
I love that.
One more time.
Good. That was so epic.
Keep getting up, right?
Getting up. Get some coffee.
So now, how can we help you? What do you need more of? More houses? More investors?
I would love more houses. I would love more investors, but I need more energy. I need more energy around the city. I want to walk into my office every morning and really feel the energy. I want to turn on the radio and hear your station. I really want to feel the passion in the city that, you know, I don't feel is always there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can be the change that we want to make in the world, right?
I think so. Mm. I think so.
You should write that down somewhere and maybe print it up on a postcard or something.
I want to get that tattoo. That's amazing.
So what is the best way to get a hold of you? Website? What's LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn, Anton Watts, or Facebook, Anton Watts, or Instagram, Anton Watts, you know.
Your firm website?
My firm website is Net Worth Realty USA. So if you're looking for investment grade properties or you're just looking to flip a property on the side, I believe 85% of millionaires are made through real estate. But 95% of statistics are made up on the spot. I know it's in that range. I don't know which one. But I do know a lot of millionaires are made. And I've worked with a lot of people who started out doing one property and now they're on 4 or 5 every month and they're doing great. So it's definitely a risk. But if you play your cards right, it's worth it.
And you're on your way, right?
Oh, yeah. On my way.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
All right. Next up, we got Cherie Morris with Cherie Morris Law. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Did you learn anything in that last segment?
I did. I did.
You're going to do some wholesale realty?
Yes.
They probably need lawyers, right?
They may. They may know what they're doing, though. They may not.
Can you share a little bit about what you're up to? What do you do in your firm?
Yes. Well, my firm is the Law Office of Cherie Morris, LLC. I am here in Atlanta. I'm also in Mississippi and Alabama, in all 3 states. I practice primarily family law and personal injury. I have tons of background experience in both, but I recently opened my own firm, in August of last year. Mm-hmm. So I've been kicking it off. It's been going well and business has been picking up. So that's awesome. And I love to be of service to everyone. So that's really what my motivating factor is and why I opened my own firm, because the firms that I work at, I didn't get the passion that I have now for helping people. And I just didn't think they were run the way I would want them to be run.
Because some of those firms can be kind of corporate-y and bureaucratic and less kind of people interaction, relationship.
Exactly. That is the one thing that I pride myself on for my firm, is to have that one-on-one, that personal attention with my clients. Mm-hmm. Because I know from experience that a lot of times when you have 150 clients coming through an office and you have 3 or 4 attorneys, those clients don't usually get that one-on-one time with your attorney. So my focus is more so to have my clients feel like they're family. They can call me. They can reach me at any time. I do text messaging, so I know they love that. You know, so I'm available to them. And I get to hear that, you know, they tell me all their problems, of course. They have to. And yeah, I'm a really good listener. I'm a really good listener. And people just kind of gravitate towards me because of that. And I would say it's my spirit that kind of keeps them with me to allow them to feel comfortable with me. So I love that.
So now how are you getting out there? Because you're new to the Atlanta market, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
You said you were only here since, what, a year or so?
Yes.
Or
less than a year, about 6 months.
And that was, you came from where? Mississippi or Alabama?
No. I just opened my own firm.
Oh.
Yeah. So I've been practicing here in Atlanta.
For a while.
Yeah, for a while. So I've been licensed in Atlanta since 2013 or 14. I forget.
Right. So it's been
several years. Yeah, it's been some years.
But you practiced also in Mississippi and Alabama.
Also in Mississippi and Alabama. I was licensed first in Mississippi in 2012. That's where I'm from Jackson, Mississippi. So mm-hmm. I always knew I was going to be licensed there. Just right. Because I knew there was going to be a need, and I always wanted to be of help to someone, maybe family member or family friend that needed it, even if I wasn't physically practicing
sure.
there. And then we moved to Atlanta, my husband and I, in 13. Also, I got licensed. It was 13. 13. So anyway, when I moved here to Georgia, I got licensed in Georgia and started working here for a couple of different firms. And then my last firm that I left at the beginning of 2016, they needed an Alabama attorney. And I was the youngest.
You got to take that test.
I was the freshest. And so they asked me to take it. And I said, hey, why not?
Why not? I'm good at this by now. I've done it twice. So what's the third time?
What's the third time? So, I mean, obviously I can pass bar.
Exactly.
That's a talent.
You do it more than once. It's a talent.
Yeah, so that's how I got the Alabama license. And I have a couple of family friends from Alabama, so I've been able to help them as well. So that came right on time.
Right.
So I love that I was able to do that. And so from there, it's just been blossoming. You know, I had a strong support system that really encouraged me to go out on my own, because I knew from, I would say, law school that I didn't want to have my own firm.
Oh, really?
Just because I didn't want, you know, I thought I didn't want to deal with the business aspect of it.
Right.
But after working in different firms and I see that, I'm like, hey, I could do this.
You're doing most of that anyway, right? Because that's kind of one of the myths, that when you're hired as an attorney, you still have to get clients. You still have to do that business mm-hmm. development part.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just law. Right.
Right. It's not just all law. So you still have to go out and market.
You might as well do it for yourself.
Exactly. And so I saw that. And then for me, being like, the reason why I wanted to be a lawyer, I wanted to be a lawyer since I was 9.
Wow.
Yeah. So ooh. I always knew.
Was it a TV show?
Right.
It had to be a TV show.
It was a TV show. The Cosby Show. Claire Huxtable was my favorite growing up. So I wanted to be just like her. Wow. So I knew then that I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I used to say I wanted to dress up every day and go to work. That was
dreams come true.
You got your wish.
Exactly. But so I knew I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer. And everything that I've done, I would say since about 10 years old, has been propelling me to be a lawyer. So I'm glad I was able to achieve that goal. But the reason why I got into family law is more so stemming from a personal issue. My parents got divorced when I was really young, mm-hmm. and my dad remarried, and my stepmom was an attorney.
Oh, wow.
And so I felt like going through that, the custody situation and the child support situation, I didn't feel like my mom was very well represented. I kind of felt like she got taken advantage of.
Right.
And so seeing that kind of stemmed that energy in me to make sure that that doesn't happen to someone else as long as I can help it.
Right.
So I kind of take that personal experience and put it into every case that I have. And it's not just mothers. Some fathers are in the situation where they are getting taken advantage of by the mother, and it's just because they don't know their rights.
Right.
So I don't discriminate mother or father, whoever.
Some attorneys pick.
Some attorneys do pick.
They specialize.
Some attorneys do specialize. So for me, it's more so I love to help the downtrodden, and they really come. It makes me feel good when I've done something to change their life. Mm-hmm. So I always, like, my husband would tell you, he likes to do stuff for people, and that makes him feel good.
Right.
Well, I'm like, well, I'm not really a do stuff for people kind of thing. I like to change people's lives. That's kind of what gets me.
Right.
So if I can help you, you know, propel to the next level in your life, if I can help you alleviate a burden that you have in your life, on a more long range impact, that's what gets me. That's what makes me happy. That's what keeps me going, keeps me thriving.
Now, can you share an example? You don't have to name names, but of somebody that was in kind of a rough situation, you were able to alleviate some of that pain?
Yes, I actually can. So I had a recent client who was not getting paid child support from a father. And the father basically told her, you know, because she was undereducated, that she didn't know anything, that she was never going to get anything. He was never going to do anything for the child. And the child and the father had a relationship, but it wasn't really a great one. So the mom, you know, she had been put out on the street. She had been through the ringer, and she didn't know what else to do. She had tried child support enforcement agency. They kept saying they couldn't find the father, couldn't do anything for her. So when she came to me, basically, it was her last resort. So what I was able to do, we were able to file a child support action. We were able to present her case to the judge. We were able to get all of the financial records that we needed through subpoena, because he was not cooperating at all.
Right.
So we were able to get everything that we needed to get, and we ended up getting her the child support order that she needed. And because in Georgia, you can do an income deduction order, we got that. Go straight to his employer, and now she gets her checks every month.
And she doesn't have to talk to him.
So in that sense, and from what she told me, she had been dealing with child support, I think, for like 6 years and had not gotten any relief. So, and that, for us, I think that was probably the quickest case I ever had. I think it was about 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah, so. And it really was because the father wasn't cooperating. So whatever I asked the judge for, if there's no other side to defend it, the judge is going to grant it. So.
Right. But the bureaucracy that's supposed to help in the situation, they just say, I can't find them. And then they just quit. And then it's up to the individual, I guess, to kind of push the ball.
Yes.
If they want it to make a change. And then, so how'd this person get on your radar? Because that must be a hard part of your job, right, is to find these people.
Yes. So I take advantage of social media a lot and do a lot of web marketing. So this particular client actually found me on Google.
Like a
Google search. And I wasn't even heavily on Google at the time when she found me. So I was like, oh, okay. Google is definitely a market that I, you know, need
to pay attention
increase.
To that.
Exactly.
Right.
So she found me on Google. But a lot of I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. For my law firm page on Facebook, I do monthly videos, just kind of giving out some free advice, talking about different subjects. Most of them have been family law subjects. Like, we may talk about what to expect in a divorce, father's rights, mother's rights, child mm-hmm. support, things like that. So I do a monthly video to kind of just get some authority going, to get people to know who I am. They get to see my face. I do allow them to ask questions, whether they send them to me before the video or during the video. So a lot of people like that aspect. And then a lot of them have just inboxed me on Facebook and say, hey, I just have a question. And I, you know, would answer it, things like that. So a lot of my clients have really come through social media or by word of mouth, through referrals from other people that I know in the business.
So if you're giving out this advice, why would someone reach out and actually employ you and bring you into their lives to actually assist them?
Well, the advice is more so, this is what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you need to hire a lawyer, because mm-hmm. we know. I'm really honest with people who give me a call and they say, I may need this, I may need that. I will tell them if it's something they can do on their own. Mm-hmm. I will tell them, you know, if you're pretty savvy with, you know, paperwork, drafting, reading, following directions, it is something that you can do on your own. You don't need to hire an attorney. So I'm not one of those shady lawyers that's going to try to get you in, and it was really something you can do on your own. So I'll let them know that up front. But some things you just can't do on your own. And it's not so that you're incapable. It's more so I've seen where a lot of judges, they don't really tend to allow the pro se people to make their case. They don't really give them the same opportunities and chances to speak as they would give an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a person, a lady in court not too long ago who that same thing happened. And she was like, I don't know what to do. She ended up, you know, retaining me to handle her case. And we're doing so. And I've been making more strides in the 2 months that she's been with me than the 2 years that she's been dealing with the case. Mm. So sometimes it's really just you need someone else to advocate for you. But if it's simple things, I would say, like, if two people are getting a divorce and they both agree and it's nothing to fight about, it's really not something that you need a lawyer to do, because it's really just filing the paperwork, paying the fees, and going before a judge and say, we want out, and that's it. So
it's not always that simple, right?
But if they
not
have,
always
if they
that
have
simple.
Kids or
yeah, if
a
they
bunch
have
of
kids,
stuff,
if they have like, property, right. If they're fighting over alimony or pensions or stuff like that, that's not really something you want to do on your
lawyer.
Own. Exactly.
That's not a legal Zoom situation.
Exactly. It's not a legal Zoom situation. So I'll let them know when they call in, they tell me the situation that, you know, this is something you can do. Go do this. And then I do offer for some people who may can do it on their own, but just need a little guidance. I will do a smaller fee and just kind of either prepare the documents for them or give them a how-to kind of thing. It's kind of like a legal Zoom, but instead of downloading it from a computer, you get a real life person to tell you this is wrong, this is right, change this, fix this, go here, go there. So I do offer that for the people, you know, who may not can afford full service representation, and they can pretty much go handle it themselves, but need a little bit of guidance.
Okay.
So I'm very flexible. I don't like to see people who have legal issues not get them resolved because of money, because there's a way around everything.
So you're willing to help. And that's beautiful, because I'm looking at what you do. It seems like such a personal profession. So do you find yourself getting emotionally involved with some of your cases? And how does that affect how you do your work? Because that must be emotionally draining. You must come from work and just, gosh.
Well, I do take my cases personal in the sense that whatever my client's goals become my goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in the sense of, Do I let it bother me? I don't really let it bother me, because I've been taught how to handle the emotions, how to channel them. When I was in law school, I worked for a children's rights clinic where we saw children getting abused, taken from their home, things like that. So I wouldn't necessarily say I'm desensitized, but when you're working in that area, you see it so often, it becomes normal. So it's like, it's just something that you have to deal with, and you just deal with it. And I know a lot of people who say, I can't believe you're a family law. I would never do that, because I just can't deal with people's problems. And for whatever reason, I love people's problems. I tell people all the time, I'm like, it's like reality TV, but it's real life. So I don't really just get emotional about them to where, you know, I can't work myself or it affects me personally, but I do know how to channel the emotions, I guess, to make sure I'm putting it into the case and placing those feelings on, say, the other party or the judge or the other attorney. So
now,
I kind of manage them.
How do you not become cynical about relationships when every day you're around kind of relationships that are failing?
Well, I will say I have the best marriage that I've ever seen in life.
I'm looking over there in the corner. Y'all can't see it, but Dexter.
My husband is here with me. He's my marketing director, so he does everything. Like I said, when I say number one supporter, he is the number one supporter. We actually are high school sweethearts, so we've been together since I was 16. He was 17. We've been married for 4 years now. So, and I would say we're still just as close now as we were at 16 and 17. So I think that some people just marry the wrong person, or some people get married for the wrong reasons. And in that situation, I want you to be, I want you to be in a happy marriage. So if you're not in a happy marriage, and I'm going to help you get out of that marriage.
So you can try again.
Try again. So I'm not, so a lot of people always say, how are you a divorce lawyer and, you know, you're married, but I see what real love and what a happy marriage
looks like. What it looks like.
What it looks like, and I'll let you know. You don't have that. You don't have it. You need to go find it somewhere
else. It exists. It's
but
possible.
It does exist, and it's possible. And like I said, we're young, so for it to happen to young people, it's possible.
Right.
It's not something that you see, oh, my grandmother and grandfather, they've been married 60 years. I don't think I could do that. It's possible.
Right.
So I can't say I'm cynical because
well, you don't sound cynical.
I mean, it's crazy because I'm just looking at it from a third person perspective. I'm like, all right, if I were a lawyer, I'd be a lawyer everywhere I go. Is that like how do you stop that? How do you turn that off? Because it's like you're good at naturally debating yourself into a situation, then you get where you like. I hate to be Dexter.
We might have to interview Dexter.
Yeah,
see how that works in real life.
Let's get Dexter on the mic, man.
Man, I'm married to a lawyer.
I will say it's very difficult to turn it off. I'm not gonna lie. It's very difficult to turn it off. And that's just because it's not so much as even being a lawyer. Like, I always want to tell people what to do. Mm. And it's more so, I know this is going to work for your life, so you just need to listen to it and do it. So that's kind of what is hard for me to turn on, because not everybody wants to hear my advice, not at that time. And so I'm learning now to kind of pick my battles, I guess. So sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it's like, you know what? We'll just leave that alone. They'll come back in 2 months, and then they'll be ready to receive whatever I have.
But I bet your clients appreciate that tenacity and that belief, and that, look, I'm here to watch your back, and I'm going to watch your back, and just trust me on this. I know what I'm doing. I've done this before. And then they do.
Exactly. I will say the best clients are the clients that allow me to work for them. Mm-hmm.
No one wants a lukewarm or lukewarm.
Right. Because it doesn't sound because some lawyers, and like we mentioned earlier, like you're in these big firms and then, you know, they don't even know what this person looks like, their client. Exactly. It's just a sheet of paper that pops in front of them every once in a while. And they're supposed to go advocate for them and they don't even know who they are or what their real problems are. And they're just looking at words on paper or the law, and you're kind of really personalizing it and giving the client this kind of attention that their situation's important enough for me to pay attention to and to give you my undivided attention. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bravo for you for doing that. And I'm sure that helps you in your career.
Mm-hmm. It helps a lot. It helps.
Well, it stands out, right?
Yes, it does. It absolutely does. As I say, I love for my clients to have that one-on-one attention, because I know if it was me on the other end, I would want somebody to do it for me.
Right. Well, you saw what happened with your mother.
Exactly.
When she didn't have that, and then she kind of paid a price for that.
Exactly.
That maybe she wouldn't have had to pay if she had somebody like you.
Kinda. Exactly. So I've seen the result.
You provide a support system, is what I'm thinking, like what I'm seeing. And I was thinking, I was like, if you're providing a support system for your clients, for you to run your business, wouldn't you need a support system also?
Mm-hmm.
So how important?
She's got one.
Yeah.
That's Dexter's job.
So is it just Dexter? Like, is it family, friends? Because I know when I was going after my entrepreneurial pursuits, what kept me, you know, either a phone call from a mom or a friend saying, just keep pushing, keep trying, you know? Because it's really hard to start a business. Most of them fail in the beginning. And, you know, it's hard to get over certain humps without support.
Well, I would say my family, both my family and my in-laws, they were probably more excited than I was that I started my own firm. Mm-hmm. They're always looking for opportunities to send me clients. They're always asking, you know, it could be something, hey, I have a person, they need a real estate transaction. Can you do that? I mean, it could be anything law related. They're going to call me and say, can you do it first? And if you can't do it, do you know someone who can do it? So they're always looking. I would say both my mom and my mother-in-law, they love to talk to people. They're everywhere. So they take my business cards and flyers and pass them out everywhere they go to anyone who's going to listen to them. So they're great with that. I have a good friend of the family who is my assistant. So whenever I can't talk to the client, you know, she goes and talks to the client, lets them know whatever's going on. She's also available like just as much as I am. So I would say my family and my circle is very, very supportive of everything. Even my friends, even if like I have a friend that say, well, I want to do something. I want to file an LLC. Can you do it for me? And I'm like, you know, you could do that yourself. And they're like, well, yeah, I know, but can you do it and then do the contract and everything and I'll just pay you for it. So it is. So they're very supportive. They try to send me business as much as they possibly can. So they, anytime that I feel like I can't do this, I don't want to do this, it's always been someone that comes in and says, hey, I have a client for you. And I can say that for me, it's very, like everyone know, running a business is very tough. And especially when you're in a client-based business, it's very tough. And I can say in my short 6 months, the few times that I've thought, am I going to be able to do this? Can I do this? Can I sustain it? It's literally the next day I have a new client walk in the door. So it's kind of been so since it happened, I would say about 3 times. And after the 3rd time, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to worry about
anymore.
That's
right. The universe, watch my back.
We can do it. They're going to keep coming. So I'm not even going to worry about it anymore. So I love my support system. They love me. And we just keep it going. Keep rocking.
Now, in your business, though, it's you don't really want repeat business, right? They have this situation happen.
Because I have an uncle who's on number 5 right, right now. So I might be able to help you out.
But you have to get clients. What I'm saying is, like, if you were a business lawyer or something like that, you would have a retainer and they'd be working, you know, you'd have one client maybe or a handful of clients. But in your world, you need a constant flow of new clients, right?
Yes.
So that's a different marketing challenge.
It is. But I will say the best referrals come from previous clients. Mm-hmm. So even if I've handled their issue or whatever it is, most often they know someone in the same situation. Or like he said, he has an uncle who's on number 5. They right. may go and repeat whatever.
They get a punch card, right?
Exactly.
The 5th one's free. Right.
So in that sense, I do have, yeah, so I would need lots of clients to come in because it's not one case that's going to, you know, bring in.
But maybe the personal injury side.
Personal injury, those come in. One case may be $2,000. One case may be $200,000.
Right.
So it really just depends. So I wouldn't say I need a constant flow of personal injuries, but a good amount of personal injury is
always great.
Yes, it's always great.
So of your business right now, what percent is family law? What percent is personal injury?
Well, I would say it used to be half and half, but now it's about 70-30 with family law being 70 and personal injury being 30.
And that's the one you personally are more connected with?
Right.
Right.
Right. So I love the personal injury clients, but they don't need as much as attention as family law clients do. So
that's more corporate-y, right? You have to deal with insurance companies.
So
and big
the
companies.
Personal injury side is more structured. So it's go to the doctor. When you're finished with the doctor, call me. We get medical records. Once we got all the medical records, we send them to the insurance company. The insurance company sends us back a response and then we go to
it's
negotiation.
The back and forth
so,
of that.
Yeah, it's pretty cut and dry, straightforward. So they don't need as much attention. They just, you know, like to know this is step 1.
But you're doing it in a timely manner.
Exactly.
Like it's not like weeks are going by and you're not following up and stuff like that.
Exactly. So if it's, and then if it's like in Georgia, the insurance company has 30 days to respond to a demand letter. So I'll tell the client, hey, your demand letter went out today. So they have 30 days to respond. So when that 30 days
Google calendar.
Exactly. Because they call in 30 days and like, say.
What they say. And then the insurance company's not doing it in 2 weeks. They're waiting the whole 30 days.
Sometimes usually. They wait the whole 30 days. If they're going to give you an offer, they'll give it to you usually within a week and a half to 2 weeks as long as nothing's missing. But they have the 30 days if they want to. I would say Some of the insurance companies that most people know will take advantage of the 30 days just because.
Right.
So.
So your clients are family law or personal injury. And if somebody has those needs, what's the best way to find you? You mentioned Facebook, website.
Yeah. So my website is www.SheriMorrisLaw.com. Facebook is at Sheree Morris Law. Instagram is at Sheree Morris Law. Twitter at Sheree Morris Law.
It's all SHARIMORRISLAW.com.
Just type it in Google.
Yes. That is correct. I can be reached here in Georgia at 678-903-3838. In Mississippi, it's 601-460-1779. And then Alabama just uses the Georgia number 678-903-3838 because they're so close. And that's really how you reach me.
Good stuff. Well, when's your next Facebook? What do? Facebook Live? You do
Facebook
these?
Live. Sure. It will probably be at the end of the, oh, no, maybe in April. I have trial the next 2 weeks. So I usually do it on a Thursday. Uh-huh. So I'm thinking like the next two Thursdays.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. So yeah, it'll more than likely be in April.
In April. Yep. And then you'll do something family law usually related.
Well, it depends. Uh-huh. I do both, first personal injury and family law. So if I've done a lot family law, like in the last couple of months, I may do a personal injury one.
Right.
And it's really because personal injury is just, hey, you need a reminder. It's not like the law is very vast or right. It's not a lot of it. Whereas in family law, it's a lot. And right. It's very so many variables that can happen in family law. So my next video probably will be a personal injury video just because I have a personal story that I want to share with my with my fan base. So it'll probably be in April. So look out for that.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Anton, also for being part of the show.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
And Daryl, great job, man. You killed it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So can we let the cat out of the bag on this thing? Can we talk with Daryl a little bit? Because, I mean, this guy's about to be out in the forefront. This is going to be a regular thing. This is Daryl's series, this Neighborhood Business Radio, right? So tell us a little bit about, are you excited about it? What do you have in mind? What kind of guests can we expect?
I'm really juiced. This is my passion. I really just want to give everybody a platform to share their dreams. And I love watching people chase their dreams. Like when me and Anton were going through those 2 years, I'd say the first year of not making a sale was the best year. You know what I'm talking about? That grind when you wake up and you're like, I got to get something done. I know exactly what I want to get done, you know? And I want to give y'all the platform. If you're listening out there and you want to start a business and you're a young entrepreneur, I want to give you that platform and I want to sit down and talk to you. So when other people are listening, they get inspired and they're like, you know what? Somebody's out there doing the same thing. It may be in a different platform, but we're doing the same thing. We're pushing. And if they can push, I can push too, right?
That's it.
I mean, I've been inspired by you completely. I mean, Mississippi. Hey,
careful. Alabama. The husband's like 10 foot away over there.
I'm impressed by him. I mean, marketing your wife. Oh, my God. And then my best friend, he's selling real estate. We got to get more people on here. I mean, this is miraculous what's
There's
going on
now.
There's
a lot
Atlanta.
Of stories to be told.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to help share them.
All right.
So stay tuned for that. That's going to be unfolding as we go. And then our very next exciting episode, I think, is going to be I'm Married to a Lawyer.
Oh, that's going to be a good one.
Dexter is going to host that show. Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of the show. And this is Lee Cantor for our producer, Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.